Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Upasmim alang nibbandati ti. Which, as you all know, means that it is appropriate, is enough to have nibbida, to have this sense of repulsion towards forms, especially the body. And it gives an indication that today's talk I wanted to focus on how we can use the reflection on the body and also others' bodies, other things, the forms in the world, as a means of assisting us in our path towards jhanas and enlightenment. Sometimes when you're practicing your meditation, you know, following these techniques, following these methods, following these ways of calming the mind, of letting go of the world, sometimes one comes across obstacles. And there needs to be all sorts of different ways and means of overcoming those obstacles. Those obstacles are signs of attachment, signs of grasping, signs of craving. If they weren't attachment, grasping, craving, then you would be able to flow right through those into the deeper states of mind called the jhanas. The jhanas is particularly known as states where you leave behind the world of the body and the five senses. So in a very deep way, an obvious way actually, the reason why one can't get into those profound states of mind is because of some attachment, craving, clinging, grasping to the body and the five senses which go along with this body. So because of that, many of the Kuba Ajahns, the Buddha himself, would encourage people to do the reflection on the body, to do body contemplation. And sometimes you ask, why are we doing that? One of the main purposes of body contemplation is to loosen this concern, this infatuation, this obsession with the world of forms. And the world of forms is in particular signified or symbolized by your own body and the five senses. The purpose of the one of the major purposes of body contemplation is to cut that infatuation, cut that obsession, so I can just see forms as forms, bodies as bodies. Even more than that, one can see that these forms are completely beyond your power, your control, as was said in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, which we chanted a few moments ago, that these forms, the rupa, the body, the objects, the food, your heart, other people, they are subject to affliction. They cause you trouble. Why is that? Because they're not under your power, they're not yourself. If they were yourself, then you'd be able to control them. You'd be able to make sure that the things of the world, like the body, other people's bodies, other people's speech, other people's action, the food, whatever, would not be so troublesome for you. It's the seeing these things as non-self, beyond my power, nothing to do with me, not my business, not mine. Seeing the body and the forms as that is how we cut the attachment, the clinging to these things which stop us getting into deep meditation. Sometimes I say this path of deep meditation is for a couple of purposes. First of all, to enjoy the bliss and to get the insights based on that bliss of jhanas. But it also has the purpose of showing you what's in the way between you and jhanas. It shows you your attachments. It's very easy for a person to talk to their friends and convince themselves they have no attachments. It's very easy to be in psychological denial about the state of one's practice and think one is doing much better than one is doing. For the test comes when you sit down in your hut, when you have to calm the mind down. And if you can't get into those deep states of meditation called the jhanas, it means that there is an attachment to the body there. There's an attachment to forms, because you can't let them go. So because of that, the Buddha and the great monks of our tradition would spend a lot of effort and time asking the monks to contemplate their body. To contemplate their body so they see it as anicca, dukkha, anatta, the three things. To see it as one of those things is enough to be able to lessen this clinging and identification and obsession with our bodies. Many of you think you're not obsessed with your bodies. If you haven't got jhana yet, then you're wrong. There's still an obsession there, an attachment, a clinging, a barrier between you and the world beyond the body. So we've got to investigate that. We've got to still practicing body contemplation. We have to practice it in a very profound and resourceful way. We have the ways which the Buddha taught to reflect upon the body. We can take those as examples. We can take those as ways of starting our contemplation of the body. We start to see this body as it is by dissecting it. We can start to see it as not something which is attractive. We can start to see it as subject to death. And all of those ways is very powerful to actually to seeing this body as something which creates this nibbida, this repulsion towards this body. Sometimes you think, what the hell am I doing having a body this lifetime? What did I want one for? When it's young, it just shits itself in your nappies, and it does the same when you're old again. And in the middle we just get a little bit of time when we're not sort of making ourselves filthy. There's only a little bit of time just when the body looks beautiful, when it's fit, when it's healthy. And the rest of the time it's decaying. And it's a great problem, a great burden. One of the reflections of the body which I've done, which I've found very powerful, was actually to see what a great burden this body is, by how much time and effort I have to put in just to keeping this body in a reasonable state of comfort. How many times I have to feed it, if not actual food and breakfast, to feed it water, to feed it drinks, to feed it air. How often do I have to wash this body? How often do I need to brush its teeth? How often do I need to lay it down? Do I need to exercise it? The demands of keeping a body are huge. If you think it's a great burden having a business, having a house, if you think it's a great burden being the secretary or being the storeman or being the abbot, none of those burdens is anything like being the owner of a body. That's the biggest burden. When the monk organized a roster for this retreat, wouldn't it be wonderful if instead of just putting the roster for somebody to look after the toilets for a fortnight, somebody to look after the sweeping, if you could put someone on roster to look after all the bodies for a fortnight so you can let yours go for the rest of the 10 weeks, so they didn't have a body to worry about. They could take it to the toilet, they could feed it, they could wash it, they could rest it, they could exercise it, so you wouldn't have to bother with it. Unfortunately, that no one can take over that burden for you. And you can see just that takes up most of your day. How many of you have got pains and aches in the body, got sickness in the body? And how much time does it take looking after these things? It should be enough when you contemplate just how much a burden this body is and how much time it takes, how much of a part of the day it takes to have nibbida towards this body. Nibbida is an aversion. It's perhaps one of the only negative states of mind which should be encouraged in the human being. It's something which sees the truth of things, that this is a burden, this is a problem, it's a difficulty. Recognizing that problem, it realizes that the thing has to be abandoned, thrown away. That was one of the great reflections which I did for the reflection on the body. Just the burdensomeness of the body. Just how heavy it was to carry around through the day. And just how it just kept eating into my time. And how much of the busyness was not done with running a monastery, nor with building. So much business was done with just looking after this body which I've got. When you see that, it should give you this sense of, what am I bothering about this body? When you get that nibbida towards the body, that sense of detachment towards the body, that sort of letting go towards this body, the sense of hopelessness for comfort in this body, sometimes you just put it down on your meditation cushion, just forget about it. Body, you can ache. Body, you can be in pain. Body, you can itch, you can cough. All the saliva can run down from your nose, right down your cheeks, into your robe. Enough, I'm not going to bother with you anymore. You abandon the body. This is why very often I say in meditation, you should let the body look after the body. You look after the mind. By letting go of the body, as a result of contemplation of the body, it's the only time when the body feels good. When the body is not bothering you anymore, because you are not bothering your body. You have detached yourself from it. You've let go of it. You're saying, this body ain't mine. If it's not mine, it's not my business. Throw you away. You can die if you want. Don't care. You just sit there. When you just sit there like that and have this courage through the contemplation of the body, you get this what we call kaya prasadi. And kaya prasadi is the tranquility of the body which leads very, very quickly to the abandoning of the body. It's like kayupasama, the calming, the settling of the body, until the body consciousness just fades away and disappears. The kaya prasadi, as many of you know, in that sequence which leads to samadhi and which leads beyond samadhi to wisdom and enlightenment. You know, they say from piti we get kaya prasadi. You know, from this joy, this interest, we get kaya prasadi. And from kaya prasadi, the tranquility of the body, comes citta prasadi, the tranquility of the mind. From the tranquility of the mind comes the happiness, the ease. And from that comes samadhi, the jhanas. And from jhanas comes seeing things as they truly are, yathabhuti anudassana. And from there comes the whole avalanche into enlightenment. And so it's an important part to get this kaya prasadi, the tranquility of the body. It's when you can sit so still for hours on end, not even worrying about your body, not caring about it. The body is just gone. But more than that, the breath goes as well. One of the reasons why we can't let go of the breath and allow that to disappear is because that too is part of the body, the Buddha said. It's a kaya sankhara. We don't know how to settle that kaya sankhara. Was it the Buddha said that pasambayan kaya sankharan in the Anapanasati Sutta? That bodily function, that bodily sankhara, should be calmed, to be settled, until it disappears. One of the reasons we can't let go of that is because the mind considers that the breath is essential for life. Which in one sense it is, but in a deeper sense it's not at all. It's essential only for the life of the body. It's not essential for the life of the mind. So very often when the breath starts to disappear, either consciously or even subconsciously, the mind will not be able to go further. It's afraid. There's an attachment to the body, to the well-being of the body, the longevity of the body. We can't let the breath disappear. Very often, when people first experience the breath almost disappearing, they get afraid. Sign of attachment to their body. Which is why if we do bodily contemplation a lot, that obstacle to deep meditation will never come up. The more we contemplate the body, there's something which is impermanent, something which is just what the Buddha say, a dharta tumor, a calamity, one of the best translations of that word, a calamity having a body. My goodness, you really got yourselves into it this time, having a body. Some of you really got yourselves into it, having a body. Just imagine just how much you have to go to the doctors. Well, you really bought into it this lifetime. Don't get a body again. You've had enough. It's a calamity, this body. So understanding what it is and reflecting upon it, it makes it much easier to throw it away. Just like a piece of rubbish you want to throw away, so this body you want to throw away in your meditation. So that means that when the breath starts to disappear, instead of getting afraid, you think, oh, what a relief, it's gone. I don't have to worry about this breath anymore. I don't have to worry about this body anymore. There's a freedom from the heaviness of the body. Even I was talking to somebody on Friday at Nolamara about people who have out-of-the-body experiences, and they all have the same experience, that once they leave the body, it's just so free, so light. This is not in jhanas, this is just an out-of-the-body experience. And then they have to come back to this body again, and it's just so heavy, such a burden, such a huge weight to carry around. It's the nature of our body. That too will count as body contemplation. To know just how burdensome and heavy this body is. It's not just this body, it's the other things which count as rupa in the world. Or your possessions. And I don't mean just the physical things you have in your hut, but I mean all the other physical, emotional possessions you have, your family. You know, the concerns about your monastery or whatever else you have. It's just such a heavy weight, such a heavy burden we have to carry around on us. And how many times do we carry these things, worrying about them, being concerned about them? That's why after a while we start to look at all rupa, not just the rupa of our body, but other people's body, the body of our belongings, the body of our relations, the body of our friends, the body of this monastery. All of these bodies we look upon with a sense of distaste, dispassion, nibbida, just knowing just how heavy it all is. We look at the whole world as a big burden. Some people want to try and fix up this world and make it a paradise. We should know that this was manusa loka, this is the world of human beings, this is karma loka. And no matter how hard you try with engaged Buddhism, all you're doing is engaging with suffering. This is not the heaven realms. It never will be the heaven realms. This is because human beings and animals, this is their realm. It's a realm of suffering, a realm of happiness as well. But the suffering usually outweighs the happiness for those who know. So this is a hopeless realm. As I said in other talks, after a while when insight arises, one realizes this realm is a prison. It's like a jail where one is being tortured. And that torture is your body. That is the jailer. And we're attached to our jailer, we're attached to our jail cell. We're just the doors open, we can go out whenever we want, but we won't go out because we're attached to this place. We like it too much. So the story which happened to me once, going to a Buddhist couple who lived in Rolleystone who had two Dobermans. One was actually quite aggressive, but they said, don't worry, it's chained up so it won't sort of attack you. So I walked right past it, and afterwards, when we were in the house, the owner of the house was very afraid and apologized because the chain was actually off the hook. The dog wasn't chained, but he'd been so used to being chained when visitors were around, he didn't realize he could escape whenever he wanted. But he got accustomed, used to, attached to, just being in that place. It's just like, are you chained to your body? The answer is no. You're just obsessed with it. You can leave at any time. You can let go at any time. If that wasn't the case, then there'd be no possibility for jhanas, there'd be no possibility for enlightenment for you. But the Buddha said those possibilities are there. You just need to see the illusion, to have the courage to walk free, to let go of this body once and for all. That's what body contemplation is there for. The Buddha gave many, many ways of body contemplation. Now, thinking about death is a great one. Because the more one contemplates the death, you notice how close it is. I don't know how old you are now, but all the people in this monastery, there's people much younger than you, have died unexpectedly, who have been fit, healthy, just like you are now, and then just before they go back to their huts, have died. Death is uncertain in its time, but it's certain in that it will happen. When you contemplate death like this, it starts to cut at the attachments to the body. Because the attachments to the body always think that this body will be there for you to use day after day, year after year. But this body will always let you down. When it does die, it usually dies at the most inconvenient times. This is our nature. So the more we contemplate other people's deaths, the more we come close to our own deaths. And where we come close to our own deaths, the whole idea of attaching to a body, either your body or somebody else's body, seems to be such a stupid thing to do. Only idiots would actually do that. Only idiots would get married. Only idiots would actually have children. And we've all been, or some of us anyway, been idiots, haven't we? And this is a consequence of our idiocy. I always say that 5 khandhas is enough. Getting another 5 khandhas to worry about is just absolute stupidity. And once you get 10 khandhas, there's usually another 5 little khandhas come along afterwards. And a few more as well. My goodness, it's full of khandhas. It's what they call it, khandhas of worms. So this is actually the problem with our attachments. It stops us actually enjoying the freedom from the body. So when the Buddha taught this contemplation of the body, he mentioned death meditation, he mentioned sickness meditation, old age meditation, to focus on this again and again and again. Well, the you people who are young in this monastery, sort of you've got the old age coming up next. It's why it's a very good spread of people in this monastery. We've got young people, we've got old people, we've got very sick monks in this monastery, which are great. You are a marvellous teaching to all those young monks who are fit and healthy. So even though you may not be up here teaching them, just the fact that you're sick, that your body's falling apart, you're a great reminder to everybody. So this is actually how we do that body contemplation. As they are now, we will one day be. And seeing that lessens our attachment and concern with this body. But one of the deeper attachments of this body is attachments to the 5 senses. I've often contemplated that the 5 senses are the body are the 5 senses. That these two, in a very profound way, sort of spin around each other. As long as there's a body here, there'll be one or more of these 5 senses. This is what the body is there for. It's a vehicle for the 5 senses to play in the world. So the 5 senses are not there to protect the body. The body is there to give a vehicle for the 5 senses to enjoy the world. So when you see what the purpose and the meaning of this body is, you see that the big culprits are these 5 senses. People want to live because they haven't finished with playing with the 5 senses. They want this body to go here, to go there, to enjoy sights, sounds, smells, tastes and touches. That's what this body is there for. So when one sees that the body is here for the 5 senses, one can do body contemplation by contemplating the nature of these 5 senses. And then we can come back to what we chanted earlier in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. That all of the sensations of happiness and pain of these 5 senses they're out of control. No matter how smart you are, no matter how powerful, no matter what medicines you take, there's no way that you can control happiness and pain in your body. There's no way that happiness and pain are part of having a body, part of having touch. Beauty and ugliness are part of seeing. Hearing unpleasant speech, people telling you off, people being rude, is part of having ears. Hearing yourself being praised is part of having ears. So I always remember that story of Sariputta being abused by this person, this lay person, as he was going on alms round. This lay person calling him terrible names, calling him stupid. And that Sariputta just wouldn't move. And then the man hit him on the head or something. And still Sariputta was equanimous. And they asked him, how you do that? He said, well, words are just sound. Some sound is nice, some sound is rotten. What's the big deal? What do you expect from sound? So when somebody calls you a dog, somebody calls you insensitive, stupid, an idiot, you should expect that. That's just sound. You can't control it. When somebody praises you and say you're the best monk in the whole monastery, just sound. Understanding that sound and the feeling, the Vedana which comes from sound, has to be pleasant sometimes, has to be unpleasant sometimes. You can detach from all this sound. People can say what they want. I don't care. People can do what they want. I don't care. When I was in Thailand, I asked Ajahn Liam, the Abbot of Wat Bapong, say, are your monks easy to teach? He said, yeah, they're easy to teach, I just teach them. I don't bother whether they listen or not, or whether they follow what I'm doing or not. That's why they're easy to teach. It's easy for me, he said. He's a really wise guy. I really love Ajahn Liam. So this is actually for you. And it's easy to live in this monastery if you don't try and teach and control other beings. But once you try and want to make them this way, you want to sort of make them sort of do this and not do that, then you're asking for trouble. Because all of these things, the Buddha said, because they're not yours, they tend to abhadaya sangvatanti. They turn towards affliction because they're out of our control. They're not me, they're not mine, they're not self. Especially they're not mine. So understanding this, all these, the world of the five senses beyond us to control. Even like the food you eat. I've noticed this, and it's a weird thing, it still happens. Every time I go on retreat, that's the time I get the best food in my bowl. When I try and control it, when I choose my own food, which is what I mean by controlling it, I never choose as nice food as when somebody else does it for me. I don't know why I do this, it must be absolutely idiotic. I've got all this choice, I try and choose the nice food, and I always mess it up. Somebody else does it for me and they just take it to my heart, and that's always the most delicious. Why is that? It's because when I try, when I do something, when I choose my food, that's when it turns to affliction. When I don't care, somebody else chooses for me, that's the most delicious. When you let go, you don't do anything, just accept and content with what you have. That's called letting go of the attachments. So you let go of like trying to control this world of the five senses. When you stop controlling this world of the five senses, that's when the five sense world disappears. It fades away. It viragas, which is what fading away means. Sights disappear. Sounds, smells, tastes, touches disappear when you don't try and control them. You're not concerned about them anymore. The only things which stay in the mind are things you're interested in. Things which fascinate you. Things which you're obsessed with. Things which you think you can control. When you realize it's completely out of your control through this body contemplation, then you let go. And they fade away. You sit there, you may have aches and pains, you can't control this body. Just let it go. It fades away. Until it's completely gone. Interesting, when the body is gone, You don't know it's gone. You don't know it's there. The whole perception of body is gone. That's what I mean by you don't know it's gone. You just don't know it. Body sense has just disappeared. Sight sense disappeared. Smell sense, taste sense, even sound sense, completely gone. This is letting go of the body. Amazing what it's like when you don't feel any pain in the body, nor any pleasure in the body. No heat, no cold. The body has just faded away into nothing. The five senses have turned off. You don't hear anything. You don't see anything. Even the echoes of the senses, which are our thoughts, imaginations, plans and memories, even those are all gone. Because not only are we letting go of the experiences of the five senses in the present moment, we're also letting go of the five senses in the past and the future as well. All the five sense world disappears. The last of the parts of the body to go, even the sutras say this, is the breath. And then sound, sorry. But the breath is the last part of the body touch to go. And then when the breath disappears, the body is completely gone. So maybe still be able to hear sound, but you let go of that. Not concerned with what's going on around. You're going in the mind. One of the reasons why people can't let go of sound is because sound is one of the basic defense mechanisms of the body. People listen to protect themselves from predators, from tigers, snakes, people creeping up on you. It's all to protect what? Protect your body. To protect the life of this body. When you're not attached to this body anymore, when you're willing to die, you don't need to listen anymore. You let go of hearing. You let go of hearing because you're not attached to it anymore. When you let go of hearing from detachment, through contemplating this body so much, you're willing to let it go, you're willing to let it die, then the body disappears. When the body disappears, the breath goes, sound is gone, everything is gone. That's when you have to come up with a nimitta, because all you're left with is the mind. And the mind always appears to be radiant. That's its nature, the beautiful nimitta of the mind. This is actually the sign that the body has been let go of, that body contemplation has done its job to remove the mind from the body. So the body is no longer there. When you see the mind, just an imitator, just even that much, if you stay there long enough, just playing with an imitator, the beauty, the bliss of a beautiful light, soon you'll get to know that that is the mind. Just the mind reflecting on itself, like the mind seeing itself, an image of itself, the imitator. And after a while, you'll realize that the body is all gone. There is no the five senses. This is beautiful, this is blissful. And you realize very easily this nimitta, the mind's reflection, and the mind itself, is completely independent of this body, because there is existing without the body, without the sounds, smells, tastes, touch, feelings. The body's gone, and the mind is still there. You understand what it's like to die. The body has died temporarily. The insight should come. I can't see how it won't come if you have the nimitta experience long enough. That the mind is something which doesn't die when the body dies. The idea of rebirth becomes very clear to you. If you take that state of meditation even deeper into jhanas, then you're completely away from the body. For long periods of time. There the mind has come together, separated from the five senses, separated from the body. You drop the body a long way behind. You've gone past the threshold into the deep jhanas. After you come out afterwards and reflect upon that state, you would know even with more certainty that the mind is something which doesn't die when the body dies. At least you'll know the truth of rebirth. Obviously that's not enlightenment, because you have to see the end of the mind as well. See the nature of the mind coming and going, but that's a whole different subject. At least we're getting somewhere. We're getting some samadhi. We're getting some bliss. We get into the places where the more powerful insights start to arise. But we have to start somewhere. And one of the places where the Kubba Rajans ask us to start is really contemplating this body and the five senses. Contemplating it again and again and again to lessen our attachment, our concern for it. So we can let it down. We can drop it. We can put it aside to gain samadhi. One of the body contemplations is the first of the satipatthanas, sammasati, which the Buddha said gives rise to sammasamadhi, to gives rise to the jhanas. This is why it happens. When we get to those jhanas, then we have the opportunity to taking it further, to drop the body once and for all. Those beings who drop the body for once and for all, who really see the nature of the body and cut off those attachments to the body, are called the anagamis, the ones who no longer come back to the realm of bodies, to karma loka, to realms of the five senses. They've cut karma, raga and vyapada, the desire for five senses, the interest in that realm, the obsession, infatuation with five senses, and with it, the infatuation of the body. And it shouldn't be hard to do that. It should be obvious that this body is a complete waste of time. It should be obvious that these five senses never give you what you're looking for. It should be obvious that in this realm of the body and the five senses, whatever happiness you get is little concern to the suffering which comes afterwards. Apasukha bahudukha, the Buddha completely always used to say, repeatedly said, apasukha, little happiness, bahudukha, lot of suffering. But letting go of the body, letting go of the five senses, is bahusukha, apadukha. Lot of happiness, lot of bliss, very little suffering. And you can experience that. You can test the waters as you get into the nimittas. You can plunge in as you get into the jhanas. And you can know what it's like to have no body. You can understand just the bliss of having no body, the superiority of having no body, and the stupidity of having five senses and a body again. In that sense, the experience of jhanas, the experience of nobody, is perhaps one of the most powerful of the ways of contemplating body. The ultimate kayanupassana, or kayagatasati, mindfulness of the body, is the mindfulness when there is nobody. Because that gives you the reference, gives you the perspective, gives you the full picture. You know body, and you know nobody. Comparing the two, it's quite obvious which is superior and where your freedom lies. So please continue doing the body contemplation. Contemplate it until there's nothing between you and jhanas. And then in jhanas, the reflection after the jhanas will contemplate the body even deeper. And maybe you'll be able to cut completely any concern, attachment, obsession, grasping at a body, so you never come back to karma loka. So you only go to the sudawasa of the anagamis, and from there make an end, or even better, make an end even now. There's a little talk this evening on the place of kayagatasati, contemplation of the body, in a way to get into jhanas, in a way to get to be a non-returner, maybe even to take it further and never come back ever again. So that's the talk this evening on body contemplation.
Satipano, Bhagavata.